a lot of my podcasts, I'm like, wait a minute, all the podcasts I'm following, they're always like, let's dive deep on this and that issue. I'm like, okay, let's calm down. I don't want to dive deep. I just want to, you know, not.
Yes, I get that. Welcome back, everyone. This is the Laundry Basket Podcast, and we are back with another just like laundry talk ramble session. I feel like it actually has been a little bit of a break this time, right?
It has. We have officially been off the mic for 3 weeks, I think.
Yeah. It's been a crazy lot. A lot has happened. Like, you literally have been to 3 different continents in that time.
That's so true.
Wild.
Yes, Europe, Africa, and North America now. Mm-hmm. So it's my life.
It's wild.
I think I've become expert at like battling jet lag and such. And derivatives.
It seems like it doesn't even affect you anymore. Like, it's not even an issue.
It does affect me, but what I do is I just make the most out of my time. Mm-hmm. You know, let's say I wake up and it's like 4 a.m. because of my jet lag. I'll just start doing stuff. Like, I don't just toss and turn in bed. I'm like, okay, I'm awake. Let's produce something with this time.
Yes, that's actually such a good tip. We should all be doing that with our jet lag.
Yes. And then I don't really nap. So what happened, for example, this time is I'll be like the first day I was up at 4, started doing stuff. By the time it was like 8:30 at night, I was pretty tired. So I went to bed. Then the next day was like 1 hour later. And then now I'm like normal schedule.
Yeah.
And that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't take about 3 days forever to get mm-hmm. back adjusted.
Exactly. Good. Yeah. What about you? Tell me something.
Oh my God. No, I have so many things that I've been wanting to talk to you guys about. So. But I think we have to start with like the news things, because there have been a lot of like big, some of them are big, some of them are really random news items that I was like, we have to talk about this.
But, and now in the news of the Laundry Basket Podcast.
None of this is like educational or like informational news. It's more just like my opinion on the news. The first thing isn't lighthearted, right? Like, it's the earthquake that happened mm-hmm. in Morocco. And obviously there's floods that are happening in so many different countries around the world right now. And it's just been kind of scary to see all of these like natural disasters destroying people's lives. And obviously you were just in Morocco. You were just in the Atlas Mountains, which is the region that was hit the hardest in Morocco. So I want to hear a little bit about your trip, and then also just maybe take a moment to like tell people about the earthquakes if they hadn't already heard about them.
The trip to Morocco was absolutely delightful. It felt like magical, actually. So that was amazing. We did go to the Atlas Mountains. Mm-hmm. Like, we were in Marrakesh. We were in the Atlas Mountains. And then, we were among those people.
Right.
We communicated with them, you know. And then when we came back, it was the second night that we were in Spain. And then I wake up and we're like, oh my God, there was an earthquake. Because I went to bed before the earthquake hit. So obviously we're just frantically, you know, calling everyone. And it took me several days of, you know, you're like shell-shocked a little bit. Even though none of our family or friends were affected. We had mm-hmm. family friends that have a house really close to there. So they were telling me how the house had like lots of cracks and stuff. So they had to, like, everything fell, like, from the kitchen cupboards, and whatever was on the table fell, and like all these things. But in terms of life and injuries, nobody had anything. Mm-hmm. And it's really, I donated, which is what I could do. But aside from that, it's the poor people who are getting the worse impact. You know what I mean? It's kind of, it's like double sad, because you're like, right. It's not like somebody lost one of their homes, but they have like another home, or if they lost like a home, but then they can go to like a sister's
house. A relative's house. Yeah, or exactly. Rent a hotel or whatever.
No, these are people that the whole community lives there. They're very, very traditional communities. The houses are made out of adobe. So it just cracks and falls. And yeah, there's like communities that's like wiped out.
Yeah.
In a few seconds, really. And that's the thing about earthquakes. Like, you don't see them coming. They take a few seconds and then they just break everything. And right. It makes you all of these disasters. In 1 month, we had the fires in Hawaii, mm-hmm. the fires here in Canada, in like a community that's very, that has a lot of ties to Vancouver called Kelowna. There were fires in like floods in Europe, and then the big flood in Libya. And you're just kind of like, wait, like, give me a moment to get over one thing before another thing. And we're not even affected directly. Like, you and I haven't lost our homes, but I think we still feel like there's just a general energy. Like, I feel like all these people who are suffering, their energy is rising up out there in the universe, and we're all picking that up.
Of course. Yeah. It's like, how could you not feel empathetic mm-hmm. and sad and heartbroken about it? You know, like, it's just not fair. And there's, I mean, like you said, you can donate, but there's still this feeling of like, you can't help. Mm-hmm. You can only do so much. Mm-hmm. And you just hope that people are able to rebuild as best as possible. Yeah. But the reality, like you said, for a lot of these small villages is like, they've been living there for like centuries, and there's no like quick fix to it.
No.
It's going to be like years and years of like rebuilding. And,
you know, even when we were there, I remember we were sitting down with our uncle who was with us, and we were having like tea right there in the mountains. It was so really nice. And we were talking about like fixing problems to help the country evolve, like in the sense of like improving literacy rates and, you know, providing more books to kids at schools and this and that, like all these like programs. And now it's like, we need a road. We right. need a house.
Yeah.
There's orphans. Like, the problems have just gotten, like, the bar is even like lower in right. the sense of like how to even uplift these communities from poverty. And yeah. I think that that's like the saddest part, like that you're thinking, okay, at least there was like shelter, there was food, there was drinkable water. We were concerned about literacy rates. Mm-hmm. Now we're concerned about a bunch of orphans. You know what I mean? Like right. it's an injury and like not enough, you know, not enough roads to access people and give them mm-hmm. what they need. Or yeah, so it's
yeah. Yeah, and I think that's one of the hardest parts about like climate change is like a lot of the times the people that are most impacted are like low income
yes.
people, and they're already facing so many challenges, and then this is something that is outside of anyone's control, and it just sets them back, and it's like it perpetuates the issues. Like you said, the bar just goes lower, and it's just like, it's really heartbreaking. So
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And it makes me think, and then like, the earthquake, okay, that's an earthquake and that sucks. But then like the thing in Libya, I'm like, there was no need for this to be a catastrophe. It could have just been, oh, you know, there's been some flooding in some streets or some homes got a bit flooded. The whole situation was because those dams were not being maintained for so many years due to like, you know, civil war and corruption in the country. Which is very similar to what happened in Lebanon a few years back when there was like that explosion in their port. And then you're like seeing all these countries that you're like, wait a minute, like there's no need for these disasters. They literally are because of negligence mm-hmm. of the leaders, you know, who have all this power. Right. So I think that adds another layer of anger
mm-hmm.
towards the world and the systems that we yeah. live under.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's actually kind of a conversation I've been seeing like amongst Moroccans is like, because the king has been responding, and I can't even pretend to fully understand mm-hmm. like the full extent of it. But I've seen, you know, people going back and forth about the king refusing aid from certain countries. Right. And it's yeah. like it's a political statement. Yeah. And some people are saying, you know, he knows what he's doing. Let him like make these decisions. And other people are saying, you know, we should just be accepting all help because like the ego should be set aside in a time like this. And like, I see both sides, but it's like there's just so much politics when it comes to these events, and you just wish that it could be just set aside, like, in my opinion.
But I am
too complicated to do that is the reality.
I'm not well versed like you on right. these issues. I have inklings though. Like certain inklings of mine are putting aside the whole debate of like monarchy versus democracy. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm not even going to talk about that.
We don't need to get
into that. I'm not going to go there, today. But I will say that this king in particular, in comparison, okay, just in comparison to other governments in that region and even previous kings of Morocco, has done a relatively good job at preserving and uplifting some parts of the country's infrastructures and economy and right and human rights and things like that. So part of me has like, I give him the benefit of a doubt. And I do, that's on one end. Mm-hmm. On the other end of the spectrum, I know that, or on the same end, I don't know. I know that sometimes, you know, we know that European and American powers have used world, you know, disasters and when countries are vulnerable as yep. like a leverage. Way to infiltrate.
Right. Yeah,
leverage sure. or infiltration and things yeah. like that. So yeah.
it's complicated.
Who's to say that, okay, who are you going to send for help? Is France going to send a bunch of troops?
Right.
You know, for help? Is that what they're going to send? Like, what are they going to send, really? Like, what's mm-hmm. the plan here? And yeah. how is this going to later impact, you know, other aspects? Yeah. So I completely yes. get it. I do give him a benefit of a doubt. I also see the immediate frustration of, like, what the actual fuck? Like, how are you not accepting help when we have nothing?
Right.
But yes, unfortunately, yeah, I'm kind of thinking, yeah, diplomacy and running a country, especially a third world country in a region like North Africa, where there's been all these like coups, let's not forget in the last like 6 weeks, all these countries have gotten like, you know, coups where they're very angry at France specifically. So the story and the politics of it is like really, really big. So yeah, I don't think there's like
very complex.
Like a perfect answer to diplomacy. There's always yeah. going to be winners layers and losers.
Layers of like
layers, yeah.
The reasoning behind each decision that yeah. seems like an easy decision at on surface level, but mm-hmm. it's really mm-hmm. goes a lot deeper. Yeah,
so
it's a crazy thing.
I've been seeing some uplifting news of how the efforts are in Morocco for raising back those communities. I don't think that the material loss and impact is going to be the hardest one to resolve.
Right.
I don't think that rebuilding a home or something like that is going to be complicated. I think what's going to take a long time is more the emotional impact that it has had on these people. And I always think about the orphans, right? Like any child that's left without parents is really at a disadvantage in a country like Morocco.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where my focus is. In, yeah. If I'm going to be concerned about something. Mm-hmm. So. And then this could lead us to, actually, I had a point written down for today's ramble, and it was, is the human mind conceived or strong enough to be aware of all the bad things happening in the world at once?
Wow.
You know, like if it wasn't for, even when we started having news like in written, like printed press, it would take some time before the news would arrive. Like maybe news would arrive about what happened in the country, but like a few weeks later, or it was written, it wasn't, there was like no video attached to it. But now I think the immediacy of how we know about all these horrible things happening in the world, and I'm like, are we even strong enough to handle this?
Right.
Is this why there's so many people who are depressed
mm-hmm.
and anxious? Because we just carry this little, it's not little, we carry this knowledge with us. It's like I come to work every day and I'm trying to focus on something. But hey, in my subconscious, I know that there's like people in Ukraine being bombed. I know that I know all these other horrible things happening at the same time, and it keeps adding up every day. There's something piling up. So yeah. I wonder sometimes.
It's a very like profound question. I obviously can't answer, but I feel like that, like you said, it is a huge part of why we have so much like depression and anxiety and also dissociation, like people who just choose to kind of like stick their head in the sand and ignore it because it's like, what are you going to do? You can't fix all of it.
No,
you can't obsess over it because at a certain point it will just like swallow you whole. And I think that's part of why, like, I admire people who are environmentalists so much, because it's like, wow, what a terrifying feat to be taking on, but you're doing it anyway. Like, no matter all of the bad news that we hear about every day, like, you're still fighting that fight. And I admire that. I am not cut out for that. Like, I am very much someone who gets overwhelmed and depressed by all of it. So
I get so depressed, you know, to what extent, like the National Geographic documentaries, I can barely watch them.
Yeah.
Because at the end, it's always the same story. Oh, totally. But this is like going to be extinct. Oh, and now we're like killing off their food, like their environments. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because of humans now. It's always the same 100%. Thing. And like, I don't blame them. I mean, it's true.
Yeah, they have to share the reality of it. But it's like, it is so painful to like really think about it. Yeah, it's devastating. And that's like just one little part of it, right? There's like so many different areas in which you can get overwhelmed and like really down about. And yeah, I don't know.
Hard to... like you feel like non-empathetic. And I think that that's the hardest part that I've been struggling with in the last few weeks, like since the earthquake, but also even since like the fires in like just a bunch of stuff. Of like, then you go back to your little life,
right?
And you feel like, why do I want these things for myself that are good things? Like, while someone else is suffering so much, like it's really hard to have that balanced emotional equation.
Yeah.
Of being like, oh, I'm going to get my nails done and like feeling happy because you got your nails done. Right. But then also, you know, someone's like now doesn't have a home because it's like, it's been destroyed because of a fire in like 20 seconds. Like it's so hard to balance that emotional equation. I still don't know 100% how to do
it. And then like to take it even further, then you feel stupid for like feeling sad because you're like, well, I have all of this. I should be grateful. Why am I sitting here feeling sad? Like it's a so fucked up cycle of like just feeling bad. And like, I think this is like maybe toxic positivity, but I feel like we really have to lean on gratitude and like realizing how much how lucky we are and how blessed we are and just enjoying the things that we do have and the abundance that we do have, even though it feels selfish. It feels like weird when you're comparing, but like otherwise you're taking it for granted. Like, I don't know. It's a weird, like it's such a good point. And
another thing aside from the gratitude is good for a reminder. I don't know. Well, another thing when I go like the opposite of emotional, because that's kind of how I balance it out. Like, let's say I'm feeling emotional about all this human loss, and I'll be like, okay, to battle this, I'm gonna go completely like, I guess the word I think is stoic, when you just like don't really have feelings about something, and I'm like, well, whatever, what's the human race anyways? Okay, we're gonna live a good 80 to 90 years, hundred if we're lucky, and we're gonna die just like everyone else, just like there's been disasters before, you know. Look at Pompeii. That was like, we have like all the evidence of how quickly that whole city was eradicated. And I'm like, we're not any more special than any other humans who came before us, and we'll have to, like, they've gone through all these other disasters, and now it's just our turn, and just so happens that I wasn't affected. Like, I go to the opposite and try to think about it like that. And then I say, okay, what is in the realm of my
control?
Control. Mm-hmm. Like, how much can I reach? Can I give a donation? I'll give that donation. How much of a donation can I give? that makes sense with my monthly budget. This is the donation I can give. Okay, now in my everyday, how am I treating the people around me? What is my mission right. at work? How am I making someone else's life better?
Right.
And that's all you can do, really.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And not to feel like you're like, I don't think that this makes me a great human being. I'm just like the I'm just basic flesh and bone here. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
It's inevitable, man. Suffering is just a part of life. In conclusion.
In conclusion, I suffer, therefore I am. Mm-hmm. So actually, I've been thinking of not look, I think yesterday I was reading the news for the last time and I was like, I need a cleanse. I need a same way
we use cleanse.
Like, yeah, news cleanse. I need okay. a news cleanse. And I was very grateful that our podcast is not about the news, you know. Mm. Like I know we did this.
I still
this
have segment, more news for you.
We did this segment, but you know, a lot of my podcasts, I'm like, wait a minute, all the podcasts I'm following, they're always like, let's dive deep on this and that issue. I'm like, okay, let's calm down. I don't want to dive deep. I just want to, you know, not.
Yes, I get that.
So yeah, what else did you have
here? Well, you want some superficial, lighthearted news because that's what I have.
Okay, yes, go for it. Please do.
Did you hear about the diarrhea plane?
No, I heard something about how in Air Canada, this girl...
Was it Air Canada?
No, somebody had, there was like vomit on their seat. And instead of being put on another seat, like they kicked her out of the plane. Oh. And it was like really bad. But
no, this is worse than that. So this was some passenger who got diarrhea and literally diarrheaed all up and down the aisle of the plane to the point that the captain was like, we have to turn around. It's like an like a biohazard.
Okay, wait. How did that happen? Like, I feel like this person was on their deathbed. Like, you know how back in the days people would die from diarrhea? Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Get to the plane? Like, it was to the bathroom? Like, on their way to the bathroom, yeah, they were
it was dripping out their body and outside of their clothes, apparently, like on the carpets, like all over the plane. Like to the yeah, like
I feel really sad for this person. First right, of all, they probably right. are like, you know, when they're like, tell me an embarrassing story about yourself. Like I feel like that's topping all the embarrassing stories.
Yeah, definitely. We don't need to like out this person. Mm-hmm. We don't know their name. It's okay. Like you can yeah. stay anonymous, but like, wow,
wow.
So that's yeah. I feel bad for the person. I also feel bad for the passengers. I got to be honest. Like if I was on this plane, I would be so just like
you didn't reach your destination because of diarrhea on the plane.
If the captain's deciding that you have to turn around, like it's affecting everyone.
A poor person. I think I would die of humiliation.
Yeah. Same.
I have a lot of questions. I have a lot of questions about how okay. that happened. Like, how did that person start having so much? Did they have the diarrhea before getting on the plane? It got worse. Was yeah. it the fault of something they ate on the plane?
Right.
I feel like
I have none of the answers on that. I just felt okay. like, you know, it happened and it was wild to me. So.
Okay, I'm going to take it to another place, non-news.
Okay.
You know when you get to work, am I the only one who has like warm-up work tasks? Like I don't get to work and then like dive into the deep end of work. Like I have warm-up tasks that yeah. just get me going.
It's like your stretches.
Yes, it's exactly that.
Yes. What are your warm-up tasks? I want to know.
One of my favorite warm-up tasks is, I guess I have favorites, is whenever the government has news about an application that's been sent, they'll send me an email. They'll be like, there's news about this application number. And then I have to log in and find that application and download the letter about whatever news it is.
Yeah.
That is definitely one of my warm-ups where I just kind of like download these letters and read them and then you know, manage who is going to get the news first and what am I going to tell each person. So that's a warm-up task for me. What about you?
Yeah, I feel like that reminds me of emails, like checking new emails. And that's one of my warm-up tasks, is just like spending some time answering emails, like responding to questions from clients, or like right now I'm doing a redesign of my website. So like answering questions to the designer, like things like that. And then sometimes I'll send out emails to my email list. So like putting together a little template for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The warm-up tasks are definitely fun, I feel like, because they're low pressure. It's, you can kind of just like take your time with them. Yeah. It doesn't feel urgent. It's like you're just getting to the little tasks that have to be done, but no, yeah, the time restraint isn't as intense as like the to-do list for the day.
I also feel like there are tasks that have a little risk in their return. Like, you know, definitely a non-warm-up task. I think my tasks that are the highest risk tasks would be when the actual moment where I submit an application, where I have to like review everything, make sure everything is perfectly written, perfectly organized, perfectly everything, and upload and pay. Like that moment is the most high pressure, high stress moment.
Yeah.
So, you know, a warm-up task would not be that. That's like nitty-gritty.
Yeah. Yeah, you wouldn't want to start your day with that. I mean, there's some days where you have to, but it's like not ideal.
If the day that I really have to, usually it's more like everything's been prepped the day before. But I know myself, I've been doing this long enough to know to never send an application at the end of the day.
Yeah.
It's better to do it in the morning with a fresh mind. So I'll prepare it the night before, like the day before. And then in the morning, if there's like a really, really tight deadline, I'll start with that. But if there's no tight deadline, I'll do my warm-up work first.
Yes, yes. Like ease into it. It's like stretching. It's
it is.
Do the little things, low pressure, but you're also like you get to check them off quickly. Like it doesn't feel like daunting. And then you get to jump into the thing that's going to take like 3 hours or whatever.
Yeah. Okay, I'm glad.
We'll get there.
I'm glad to know that. Although they say that's not how you should do it. They say you should start with like the most important heavy
load.
And I'm like, no, because then I'm doing it, but I'm also, I don't know, it's not how it works. I'm doing my more tasks first.
I'm the same way. Yeah. Okay. I'm straying away from work stuff and going back to a random freaking article that I read this week that was about, well, I guess this is kind of news related, but so this, I think he was a college student. He passed away because he ate pasta that was left out on the counter for a week. And I just keep seeing headlines about rice and pasta and like the food safety rules of how long you're supposed to leave it out. And okay, a week is obviously wild and extreme. Like why, like that must have smelled, like, come on, man. But there are, in many cultures, people who will leave out rice specifically, like overnight. Sometimes it's in a rice cooker, which I think makes a little bit more sense because it keeps it at a certain temperature, which is like a food safety rule. But there's all this like research that shows that rice and pasta and like starchy foods grow bacteria at like an alarming rate. And so you're supposed to actually put them away after like 20 minutes, which is wild when you think about like going out to a restaurant and ordering like a plate of rice and like it gets to your table, you're like sitting and socializing for like an hour, and then maybe you have leftovers and you take them home. Like it's been way more than 20 minutes at that point. And I just think about this every day, like every single day I'm thinking about rice and pasta and I'm like, dude, we are not following protocol. And what if we die? Like I got into like a deep, like, what's it called? Wormhole? I don't even know. I got into a whole thing about how you're supposed to like store it.
Because rabbit hole.
Rabbit hole. Thing, yeah. Not a wormhole. Rabbit hole. Like I usually will wait until the rice. So say I cook a pot of rice, I use like half of it. And then I usually wait until it cools down before I put it away.
I do have that. I don't know why I have that impression too, that we shouldn't put hot stuff in the fridge. I don't know why.
Is that we should or we shouldn't?
That we shouldn't?
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Yeah.
But apparently it's better. So you don't want to put hot stuff that's like sealed in the fridge because it'll still grow the bacteria because it won't cool down fast enough. And also it'll bring the overall temperature of your fridge down or up in temperature. Which could cause other things to grow bacteria. But you also don't want to leave it on the counter for an hour while it cools down because then it'll start growing bacteria. Okay. So apparently... And don't like follow my rules on this because I, again, think about it every day because I still haven't figured out like the perfect answer. But apparently you're supposed to put it in a new container because if you leave it in the pot, it's going to like stay warm for longer. Yeah. And then some people were saying, oh, you can put a metal spoon or fork in it, leave it uncovered, put it in the fridge because the metal will conduct more cold and cool down the thing. And then once it's cool, you cover it.
Okay. I could see you're very passionate about this.
I'm not kidding when I tell you I think about it every time.
Yeah, you do. I think I followed the smell protocol. Okay. If it smells all right, everything's been, it's okay. It's been out at the counter, in the fridge, but it still smells all right.
Okay.
If it smells bad, it's not okay. That's kind of my rule.
Yeah.
I haven't been very, you know, following many other, like, I'm not timing myself here or anything like that. I've been very much using the smell.
Yeah. No, like, that's legit. I used to definitely do that, too. And I think the more I read and learn about it, and I've taken food handling permit classes several times, and like I know the rules, but with rice, and like I think I'm more worried about like meat and following the rules than I am. I just never thought about the rice and pasta, and now I just keep seeing headlines, and I'm like, is rice gonna kill me? Like, do I need to be paying way more attention to this?
I think as a general rule, have your rice, and when you're done, put it in the fridge, and I think you'll be just fine.
Yeah.
Honestly. Okay. And if you go to the restaurant, just don't take the leftovers home.
Yeah.
And there you go. And then you don't have to like do the math.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I think those are good. I think you have to minimize how many things
you worry about.
You worry about. And I don't think pasta and rice should be something you worry about.
I think about it far too much, obviously.
I mean, I know this is also your working environment is food, so that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, like I'm trying to figure out what to tell people to do with leftovers. Yes. And I'm like, And also there's, you know how canned things and actually just packaged, like processed foods in general have different, you know, labels. So there's like, the certain things will say refrigerate after opening. And then some things are the same type of thing. So like it could be a peanut butter or like jam. And then like the same product, but a different brand will not tell you to refrigerate after opening.
Yes, those are very confusing things.
Yeah. And then there's also the sell by label. And then there's the enjoy by label. So it's like, if it's a sell by label, do you have like a week to eat it after the sell by label? Is it a month? Like what? Yeah. There's no expiration. Like it's just,
I'm not happy with that. I'm not happy with how that's done, with how they put us in such, like, they give us too much control over something we know nothing about.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I agree.
You get that one.
Yeah, I do get that one. All right. 100%. 100%.
All right.
Go with your smell. I would say whenever in doubt, go with that.
It's a very important sensory thing.
Mm-hmm. I think that's why we have it, actually. Like one of the reasons why we have it. Okay, so this is a fun little thing. You know how in social media there's these memes where they're like, when I win the lottery, I won't say anything, but there will be signs. Have you ever seen those?
Yeah.
And then the signs are always hilarious.
Yeah.
So I was like, it's a fun way of saying, what would you do with your money? Right. But it's easier it's a nicer way to say there will be signs and I won't say anything. Which one would be your, like, do you have like three signs that that we could
I think I need to think about it while you tell us yours, because this is like,
okay, so well, many different ways. One of my signs is that I would be super fit because I would just like, I think I would just stop working and all my time would be just like, you know, at the gym or doing this other kind of workout or this or that. I would be like, in one day I could fit in like three different kinds of exercises and stuff. So that would be one of them. Like, I would just be super fit.
Yeah. And also like hire a private chef to make you really nice meals.
Yes. That was another one.
Perfectly balanced and low inflammatory and all of it.
Yeah.
But also delicious.
Also delicious. In my kitchen, there'd be just a private chef with like amazing, like a huge fridge with, there would be no problem with anything going bad or weird expiration dates because everything would be like from the farmer's market, super fresh. Yeah. Absolutely. That would be one of them.
Yeah. I'd also probably have another dog.
Yeah, I thought yours would go towards the animal. Like some people have it, they'll be like, they'll get a house full of like dogs or cats.
Or maybe just a whole other house for the dogs.
Yeah, it's like, I won't say anything, but there will be signs. And it's just like a dog house or something like that. Yeah. I put another one there that was like travel, but then I was like, no, because I'm already traveling and I don't really haven't won the lottery. So
yeah. You wouldn't get like a private jet or anything, right? Like what would you, how would your travel change?
It's so hard to answer because we're not millionaires. So sometimes I feel like our brains still don't think the way millionaires think.
Yeah.
Like, why do millionaires have private jets? I know that some people have private jets because they're known, like they're famous. So they would be harassed to go on like general airplanes. So,
but or just like the ease of being able to just jump on it, and not have to plan it in advance. Maybe
and you don't go through the same kind of security at the airport. Yeah. You're not like there's all these other perks. So, you know, I don't think I would need all that stuff just because I won the lottery. I would probably fly first class. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah,
but yeah, I'll take the commercial airlines, but flying first class. Yes, that would be a sign. Yeah.
I feel like we should. This should be an ongoing one that we revisit because I'm gonna think of more after we're done, for sure. So this is a conversation I had with a friend this week, and it's also been coming up weirdly multiple times. But there's a lot to say about the kind of people who go into like a coffee shop or, you know, a restaurant that they visit whatever, however often, and assume that the baristas know they're regular. Okay? There's a difference between those kinds of people and the people who show up often enough that the baristas actually get the chance to say, oh, will you have your regular? Right? Like, there's a
difference. So do you think there's some people who are like, and they have this sense of entitlement?
Yes.
Okay.
No, I know for sure because my friend is a, you know, he owns a juice bar and he was like, yeah, so there's these certain people who will come in and just be like, I'll have my regular. And the poor fucking employees are like, I don't know what you're like, they have to ask. And it's like this whole awkward thing versus like Steve goes to this coffee shop every morning and they have now after a few months of him going in, they do know his regular. And so he'll wait for them to ask, right?
Right.
Like, he's not just going to go in and be like, give me my regular.
I get it. I get it.
The entitlement, the audacity of those people to think that they are so important that like this poor freaking person working a minimum wage job is just like obsessing over your freaking latte order and your like double shot, whatever, two pumps, like, no. And if they do remember, like, that's awesome. And you should be appreciative of it. Mm-hmm. But don't expect it. Because even if they do know, like, what if they're having an off day, and they're just like, overwhelmed, and like, you're not the center of their universe. Like, it's just a weird thing to me that those people even exist. Like, what? Like, how important do you think you are?
I think I really pictured it in my mind when you were like, I'll have my regular, and I feel like everything just made sense when you did that. I'm like, oh yeah, those people exist, and there's so much more to them than just that.
Right It's a whole personality trait. Like, it says so much about you as an individual if you're that person. Like, stop and reassess everything, because you are the problem.
I think that it's another, it's kind of like the people who walk around with very expensive purses, but they're not even rich. They're like,
oh,
they just have lots of.
There's a lot to unpack with that kind of person too. Like,
yeah, but it's the same idea. They're not the same. They're not necessarily the same person.
Yes, but there's overlap.
But they might be like the person who walks into that coffee shop is like, I'll have my regular, and they're not really regulars. Might be like a conscious, like, you know, woke, whatever. Like, I don't spend money on expensive purses, but they express like it's the same thing, just expressed differently. Yeah. It's weird that in my mind it's making this connection somehow.
Yeah. And even like oftentimes I'm sure they are irregular, but it's like you leave that up to the person who has to like remember a million people's drinks every day. Like you don't know what their day looks like.
You don't go out there saying, I'll have my regular.
Yeah. Because
that's your regular in your head.
Yes.
It's not like a regular known to everyone else.
Right. It's just such a weird thing to me that anyone would feel that, like, it's the audacity,
it's,
man.
It's so, I feel like this is an important consideration, like, to think about. Yeah. Like, you remember how we did the red flags, green flags? Mm-hmm.
This is a red flag. Yeah. Yeah, because me and my friend were talking about it, and he was like, and then I brought up Steve and how they like know his drink now. And he was like, I would hope he's not the one who assumes. And I was like, oh no, if he was, like, it would be a problem.
This relationship would not this function. This would not the way be working.
Such a red flag.
I get it. It's funny because I was thinking about this reminds me of the people who have purses, like, even though they're not rich. Mm-hmm. I saw this quote and I was like, yeah, I get it. And it was like, 8 p.m. is the same thing as Thursday and is the same thing as November.
Oh.
And they're like, I can't explain, but it's the truth. Like,
okay.
Because if you think about it, 8 p.m. is like that moment in the night where it's like, you're not going to start something new.
Right.
It's also kind of early still, but like, what?
Yeah.
And that's the same, like, Thursday is that day of the week where it's like, yeah, well, the week's not done, but also you can't just feel it's not Friday, but
yeah.
And then November is not the last month. You still got work to do, but also is it you kind of are squeezed because you're like, yeah, right. But it's only 2 months left. Yeah. So I don't know.
Wow,
kind of made
so
sense.
True.
And since that. I read that quote, I've been trying to think about other things that are like 8
the same,
PM
but
Thursday
not really
for November. Yeah. But
there's the same energy. That's what it is.
Yeah. A shared energy.
Yeah. Totally.
I want to see the entourage. Like, I want an actual real show or a series or a video or someone to show me in detail the entourage that goes behind celebrity mothers or parents in general. Okay. But usually it would be mothers. Because
the team.
Yeah. Like, who's carrying the diaper bag? Who's, you know, doing all this stuff? Like, who's actually there? Who's actually taking care of this kid while you're traveling, while you're shopping at luxury stores where kids are not even allowed, while, you know, you're all of the stuff that you do as a celebrity mother? I want to see who's taking care of the kids because I don't want to see a picture of you and your kid all happy in the car. No. I want to see who's that woman or man or who all the people taking care of the child. I feel like this would give us a lot of peace. Us non-celebrity, I'm not even a mom, but like non-celebrity moms could just be like, yeah, easy to say, J-Lo. When you've got this whole easy to have a perfect workout and a perfect body and a perfect skin and this and this and that.
Right.
And two twins, you know, as your children. So
100%.
I just want to see, I'm not hating. You know, I wish I had all the money to have this entourage. And I think that's where it comes from. I want to know what the entourage is. So I can get my list ready. And maybe I could like start budgeting for this entourage.
Yeah.
And get it right.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. It would be really nice to see like the reality of it because it just looks so good. But I do think there's an element of like the grass always being greener, because I do have friends whose families, like whose parents were very much working all the time, and they feel like they missed out on part of their relationship with their parents. So I don't know. I wonder about those kids also, like if there's some resentment with their parents about like them not being present enough.
Yeah, but like that's the kids' emotions to deal with. I'm not worried about that, because you know, this way or that way, the kid can always blame the parent for whatever, right? A poor kid can blame the parent because they were poor. The rich kid's gonna blame the parent because, oh, they was working too much. So there's always gonna be a reason to blame the parent from the kid's perspective. I'm worried about, you know, what are these? Because sometimes I hear some celebrities, especially JLo, she'd be like, yeah, you know, my mom travels with us a lot. I'm like, yeah, your mom's, that's great. There's other people. I know your mom is not the only person taking care of your kids when you're traveling. Okay.
Yeah, so for sure. There's a whole team for that.
No. I just want to know. I feel like it would be amazing. It would be amazing to have a real reality show about those people. Those people can tell us how it is for them.
Those people, they're never going to let that happen. Those people know all the dark, dirty secrets. You know, people signed so many NDAs. It's like top secret.
Right.
But it would be such a good show. I would watch that.
You know, are those people like packing up their kids' lunches, packing up their kids' clothes, shopping for their kids' clothes?
Yes. All of that.
The whole thing.
JLo's not packing lunches. That's for sure. No way.
Well, that was a thing. Okay. I think we can close the ramble here.
Yeah, do honestly, you want to do our sharing is caring and our tarot
card? Also my tarot card. I'm not at home and I don't know if I have my tarot deck with me. Let me check.
Ooh, I could pull one. Let's pull a card. Mm-hmm. It is the King of Cups.
Nice. Been pulling kings. Last ramble was a king too.
Nice.
Oh, and it's straight up. Love this. You're going to have to interpret this. You're looking at me like, I have to say something.
I don't know. I am not the one. I am so rusty.
You know what's funny? The King of Cups kind of reminds me of what we were talking about at the beginning of this podcast. Because the King of Cups is in charge of his emotions. The energy is masculine. Doesn't have to be a guy. But the King of Cups is this straightforward energy that is completely in touch with their emotions, has no problem communicating their emotions, but in a healthy way, like it's not hurting people around them, but really a person who uses emotional well-being as a way to make decisions and walk through life. So I think it's a nice way to, you know, remind us, because we were talking about how do you balance out your emotions between all of this chaos in the world and your little life that's really insignificant. So I think it's just a nice reminder of, among all these emotions, all the chaos, you still have to find your balance and, you know, master them.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Thank you. Let's see. Do you have a podcast that you want to share?
Actually, I want to share a book. I'm reading this book that I really like. It's not a new book. It's actually relatively outdated. But it's from one of my favorite Latin American authors. Her name is Isabel Allende. And the book is called The Island Under the Sea. I'm just translating word by word from Spanish. The Island Under the Sea. It's going to sound like that, the name in English. And it's a story of a girl and her master. So this is a slave girl and her master in the colony that is today Haiti today, but back in the days it was just the colony of France in the Caribbean. And it's the story. It's the story of, you know, everything that happens, and you get to learn about how society worked back in the days, and eventually Haiti had like one of the biggest revolutions that the slaves revolted against their masters. So it kind of walks you into that, like the years prior to, and then when it happens, and touches up on like Haiti, and Louisiana is involved in this too, and all this stuff. It's really, really good, really well written, and it's been a pleasure to read it. So yeah, Isabel Allende is her name, and the book is called, in Spanish, it's La Isla Bajo del Mar. I think it's the island under the ocean or under the sea. That's what I'm sharing.
Cool. Thank you. And if you guys enjoy our podcast, please share with a friend or a family member or a loved one. And we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.